we've driven. Order 56 here, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. I'm going to go ahead and open up the Committee on Judiciary. We have a number of items to cover today, and what I'm going to do is first start off with possible measures of introduction. I have a number of LCs, and I'll just put them on the record. LC 1178, LC 1181, LC 2737, LC 2870, and LC 3450. Those are being requested to come in as committee bills. That's five LCs, and the chair would entertain a motion for those, for that to occur.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist moves that those LCs that I've already put on the record be received as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we're going to go ahead and start at the top of the list today. We have Senate Bill 380. I'll open a public hearing on 380 and counsel.
Senate Bill 380 would allow an expert witness in a criminal trial to testify via simultaneous electronic transmission if both parties consent. We do not yet have the fiscal impact statement on this.
Okay. Thank you. So basically, we can take the testimony today, but we can't move the bill because we don't have all the paperwork in place that we would need to do so. I have two individuals that have signed up, and it looks like it's Randy, is it Rampler, and then Gil Meyer.
Senator Devlin.
And the good senator didn't sign up. Should we let him up? Richard, come on up.
He's so quiet. You know?
Stickler for Roger, yeah. Isn't he?
And would you mind any company, or do you want to be by yourself?
It would be fine.
Okay. So if the other two want to come on up, that way we'll just have a complete panel. And, of course, we'll let the good senator give his testimony. Then we'll ask if there's any questions of him and let him go on his way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing Senate Bill 380 today. Thank you for allowing me to come here and testify in its favor. Last year, the staff of the Majority Office toured the Forensic Services Division of the Oregon State Police. During that tour, which was actually extremely interesting, it was about the third time I had actually been through the facilities, but it was very interesting, but we got into a discussion. And the discussion was about that the division had the capability for people to appear electronically in trials, and that they, criminal trials, and that they had been doing so on occasion. And then a circuit court judge appropriately ruled that they could no longer appear electronically before a jury. Because in the law, if you just straightforward reading the law, and I am not an attorney, you cannot have testimony of this type in this form before a jury. The practical impact of that is that the forensics experts at the Oregon State Police now have to travel to locations. It's expensive in terms of time. It's expensive in terms of travel expenses. And I would guess in some cases it even results in delays before the proceedings, trying to ensure that people are there. Whereas before, they could have simply went to a room in the offices there, been available, simulcast. It's, you know, it's two-way communication.
The secondary actual expense
is that the Oregon State Police Forensics Division does not have that much redundancy in some of its areas. Plus, it actually has plenty of work to do. And so when they send off a forensics expert 100 miles away, 200 miles away, and in this case, in some cases, 300 miles away, work that could be done is not being done in as timely a manner. I said I would look at the issue. We had this bill crafted. I talked to the chair of the committee, the interim chair, and now the chair during the session, and said basically that I would propose an amendment that basically would allow this to occur in terms of by teleconference, but only in cases where all the parties agreed to that process. So the prosecution, the defense, the defendant, and the courts would all have to agree. I think this will save resources and I think it will be as an effective means of finding what is a just decision in these cases as if the expert had actually appeared in person.
Thank you. Any questions for the good senator? Richard, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll go ahead and take the testimony from the other two. Randy, why don't you start, and then Gil will go second.
Chair Probozanski, members of the committee, my name is Randy Wampler. I'm the Forensic Services Division Director of the Oregon State Police, and I am here today testifying in support of Senate Bill 380. In 2006, the Forensic Services Division received federal grant funds that allowed us to purchase video communication equipment, the justification being that it allowed for testimony to be conducted via video transmission. This being allowing us to save travel time to and from courthouses around the state of Oregon and keep the forensic scientists in the laboratory. And then in September 2008, it was discovered that ORS 131045 disallows the use of simultaneous electronic transmission, in other words, video, for jury trials. Senate Bill 380 would provide an exemption for expert witnesses, allowing their testimony by simultaneous electronic transmission when all parties agree. In 2008, there were 39 uses of the video transmission system for various hearings and court testimony by members of the Forensic Services Division. That video testimony saved 240 hours of driving time, along with 13,000 road miles. This equates to roughly 400 or 450 gallons of fuel. In 2008, there were a total of 452 court testimonies altogether logged by members of the Forensic Services Division. If even 20% of those were to be eventually conducted by video transmission, there would be hundreds of hours of analyst time saved, thousands of miles of driving time, of driving miles saved, and many hundreds of gallons of fuel saved. That equates to more time in the laboratory by forensic scientists, thereby resulting in more cases worked. We ask that you give favorable consideration for Senate Bill 380. We believe it allows for the Oregon State Police to save even more time and money in the future.
Thank you.
Gail. Thank you. Gail Meyer, and I'm the representative for the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, and good morning to Chair Pozanski and the committee. We like the bill. We think it's a good idea. We think that it adequately protects the interests of both parties by requiring the mutual consent, so this isn't going to be imposed against one party over the objection of the other. It's advantageous from our perspective because it would allow for a larger national reach of use of certain experts. So if we have an expert on the East Coast, we wouldn't require that individual necessarily have to fly back for their testimony. And we can foresee also where it would save money. So we think it's a good idea.
All right, great. Thank you. I just want to put on the record, Randy, if you'd be so kind. My work with the forensic is basically on lab tests that come in, such as on DII and stuff like that. And I think we just need to put on the record that in many cases you're talking about someone's time of maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes on the stand, and that's all they need to be there just to do the formalities. Now, of course, those reports are now accepted, but you used to actually had to have somebody come in from the lab to prove up whatever the findings were. And could you just maybe give us a perspective of how much time you guesstimate when a tech is called to a case on an average, how much time they actually are there for the trial in the sense of on the stand as compared to the time it takes for them to get there, wait for the trial, and to be called and then return back to their office?
Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, time sitting and waiting for court is certainly a significant amount of time. I can speak from my experiences that I would have times where I could be sitting outside of a courtroom for 3 hours waiting for my testimony. This would allow us to basically receive a phone call from the court stating they were ready for the testimony, and then essentially maybe a 5 to 10 minute preparation time, and then the actual testimony. And you're right, many of the testimonies take no more than 10 or 15 minutes. And that we tend to see the majority of our testimonies in the toxicology arena that deal with DUIIs, and those again generally are very short-term testimonies.
Gail, did you have any comment? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question. Randy, you say in your written testimony that there were, in 2008 there were 39 uses of the video transmission system. Were those bench trials, or were they before the September 2008 discovery that the statute didn't permit them?
Chair Prezanski, Senator Bonamici, we had actually several testimonies that were actually jury trials prior to this this discovery. It was actually a trial in Curry County where the judge had noted that the statute disallowed this. We have had several hearings and bench trials, though, as well. So it has encompassed all of those.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. We're going to go ahead. Let's see. Is there anyone else? Thank you all for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 380? Not seeing anybody. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing, and we will bring this one back once we get the proper documentation to move it into a work session. And we're opening up a public hearing now on House Bill 2172.
House Bill 2172 modifies the procedure for obtaining relief from sex offender reporting requirements. It has no expenditure impact and no revenue impact.
And let's see, at this point we have Vi Beatty. Vi, why don't you come on up?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Prezinski, members of the committee. My name is Vi Beatty. I'm the manager of the Oregon State Sex Offender Registry with Oregon State Police. I'm here in support of this bill. I also have been authorized to express the support of the Oregon Chief of Police Association, the what House Bill 2172 does, as counsel stated, is under current law, offenders file for relief under our 10-year standard relief language in the county they currently reside. This would change it to the county of adjudication or conviction. That way, the records that are housed in that court do not have to be transferred to another court for review before relief is granted or denied. We also have a contingency of sex offenders who have moved out of the state. I know of a couple people currently living in Montana. They have to register in Montana simply because of their requirement in Oregon. There is no other reason they register as sex offenders there. In order for them to be relieved, they would have to move back to the state of Oregon to become a resident so that they can file in their county of residence to be relieved here to go back to where they currently live so they don't have to register there. So this also would allow them to have a legal representative file for them here in Oregon because it would, again, go back to their county of conviction.
Great. Questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2172? Not seeing anyone come forward, we'll close the public hearing. Open a work session on House Bill 2172.
Chair, I move House Bill 2172 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2172 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And do I have a carrier for this one? Senator Boquist will carry the first of today's bills. And we're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 2174. And counsel?
House Bill 2174 requires a person relieved of reporting requirement to send a copy of the order of relief to the Department of State Police. Again, this has no expenditure impact and no revenue impact.
Bye. It looks like you're going to be up here. Come on back. And if you have other ones besides this one, you don't have to go back and forth. Okay. And if you can sign in again for the record on this one.
For the record, my name is Vi Beatty. I am the manager of the Oregon State Sex Offender Registry with Oregon State Police. Again, good morning, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. I'm also authorized to express support on this one for the Oregon Chiefs of Police, the Community Corrections Directors Association, and the Sex Offender Supervisory Network, in addition to Oregon State Police. Currently, under this particular statute, persons who are relieved upon sentencing for certain crimes of their requirement to register by the registry that they've been relieved of that requirement. So we have officers out there stopping people who have been convicted of rape 3, sex abuse 3, sodomy 3, contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor, or sexual misconduct, who are not required to register, but no one has any information regarding that. What normally happens is an officer will call our office and say, does this person have a requirement to register? If we have a relief order on file, we can check our records and we can say the person is not required to register. It streamlines the process. Otherwise, we say we have no information and we have to start scrambling to find information from the courts. So what this does is it just streamlines the process for the offender, for the officer, for the registry, so that we don't get any false arrests, and the information is just there for us. So that's what we're trying to do with this, is just have the offender send us, upon relief at sentencing, a copy of that order so that we have that record and we can give that information as soon as we have it.
Thank you. Questions? All right, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to come and give testimony today on House Bill 2174? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2174.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2174 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2174 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Wissett, will you carry this one? And we're going to go ahead and open up our next public hearing. This is House Bill 2305.
House Bill 2305 requires two or more classes of stock affected by an amendment to vote as a single group. It conforms ORS 60.441 with the Model Business Corporations Act and deletes the disparity between series and class voting. It has no expenditure and no revenue impact.
All right, thank you. And it looks like Chris Hull. Chris, come on up, please. I'm hoping that was a U, not an A. If it's Hall, then I apologize.
It's Hall. H-A-L-L.
It is. Okay, well, I will write it where I can read it. Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Chris Hall, and I'm a partner with the law firm of Perkins Coie. I'm also a member of the Oregon State Bar Business Law Section Executive Committee and the chair of its Legislative Committee. The business law section has recommended some changes, what I've referred to as fixes, to Oregon's class voting statute. So basically, HB 2305 corrects what I consider an unintended problem with current law regarding shareholder class voting requirements. And in making this correction, we actually move Oregon statute to be in line with the Model Business Corporation Act, which is the basis upon which the Oregon corporate statute is based on. So currently, Oregon law requires different groups of shareholders to vote separately on amendments to company's articles of incorporation. And this is meant to provide protection to specific groups on amendments that may be particularly burdensome on that group. The groups are defined by classes and series, and I just take a second to make sure we're on the same page as what those are, because this is actually the important to the amendments. A series is really a subset of a class of stock. So a corporation may have, an Oregon corporation may have, like Class A voting stock, Class B non-voting stock, and preferred stock, so three classes. And then it may have Series A preferred, Series B preferred, Series C preferred, and so on. So it's just a subset. And that's typically what a venture capital investor would invest in. So now we're saying the main rule that classes and series vote separately on certain matters. Oregon law provides that if amendment would affect two or more series in the same or substantially similar way, the series would vote together.
In other words, if amendment
doesn't have a particular effect on a particular series, the series doesn't get a separate vote, which really would be a veto right over the amendment. But if they're treated the same as everybody else, they should be voting together with everybody else. The rule requiring similarly affected series to vote together does not provide that similarly affected classes vote together as a group. So the current law draws really an arbitrary distinction between series and classes, and this is meant to kind of close that gap. So, for example, an emerging growth Oregon company requires a typical venture capital financing, preferred stock financing. They would go and get the vote of every series.
Sorry.
They would get the vote of every series of preferred stock as a group, and separately every class of common stock, regardless of whether with the voting rights are negotiated in the articles. So specifically, situations have arisen where a company wants to add a series of preferred stock for some financing, but a non-voting class of common stock has a right to, that may be issued to, say, employees for employee compensation, has a right to veto the financing, and the company and the investors get a little surprised when they have to go to the day-to-day employees, maybe their assistants, and say, hey, can we, you know, for stuff that's just given them for economic participation, and convince them that they need to go along with the financing and they otherwise have no idea really what's going on. So Oregon corporations, by creating a non-voting class of stock for economic participation in the growth of the company without shifting control of the company, inadvertently create a blocking class of stock, which is the opposite of the intent. But on another note, coincidentally, the law also mandates that series vote separately on something that may similarly affect them, even though each series may say, I want a separate vote nonetheless. So it's arguable that they can even negotiate a better resolution. So House Bill 2305 resolves these problems by providing that series and classes of stock, affecting the same or substantially similar way vote together, and allows stockholders of the board to actually provide separate voting groups if they want to. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hall?
No, I want to apologize for the cell phone.
Don't worry, we'll get another question later.
In trouble. And I also usually do this when Perkins Coie is here. I just need to disclose for the record that Mr. Hall is one of my husband's law partners, so
okay.
Which makes it especially embarrassing that my phone rang.
Hopefully it wasn't him.
Yeah, it's back in the firm, no doubt. All right, any other comments or disclosures or anything else? All right, Mr. Hall, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who want to give testimony today on House Bill 2305? Not seeing anyone. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2305. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2305. And the chair will take a motion on House Bill 2305.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
One second, please. Senator Boquist has moved House Bill 2305 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussions?
Do we have a fiscal?
No.
It shouldn't.
It's no signature.
There's no.
Okay,
usually we get a little thing, but okay.
More importantly, the council does have it.
Great.
Okay. Any other discussions, comments?
Sure, I should probably amend it that Senator Bonamici should carry this.
Yes, thank you. No.
You can only see from here on TV, Bonamici will be the carrier. You read my mind.
Thank
so we'll
you,
go
Mr.
ahead and
Chair.
Close. No objection as ordered. And Senator, guess who's carrying?
Thank you.
I do have a request from the state bar. I know that you've been very gracious in giving us a little sheets as to summaries about what should be included.
Right.
The last one that Senator Bonamici had was like 5 pages. We'd like to have one that's maybe 2 paragraphs on this one, modifying the Oregon law to reflect the Model Business Corporation Act. Good law should pass. The president of the Senate would be very appreciative of that as well. So enough of the sidebars. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 248. And, Council, if you can bring us up to date.
Senate Bill 248 creates a default prohibition on disclosure of personal information of victims and witnesses to youth offenders in juvenile proceedings. The -1 amendment was passed out of the House, and that simply changed some language to include that you'd have to request the information from the district attorney's office or the juvenile department, since the juvenile department deals with the majority of these cases. There, in this case, was a minimal expenditure impact and no revenue impact.
All right. And so what I'm hearing is, what I heard you say was dash ones had been...
They need to be put in, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm assuming they need to be put in as compared to... Did something happen on the house side? Because I thought I heard you say something about the House side.
No, I wasn't familiar with this process of passing it through with an amendment, and I just wanted to let...
Okay, so we have a dash one that needs to be considered for adoption. Chair would take a motion on the dash ones.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one into SB 248.
Senator Volquist moves the dash ones into Senate Bill 248. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, I move SB 248 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Volquist now moves Senate Bill 248 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. The chair will carry this one. And council, what else do we need to do today?
I believe that's what's for.
All right. Does anyone have anything else for the good of the order? If not, we're going to go ahead and adjourn. I believe we're set for tomorrow at our current regular time of 8:30, and we'll adjourn until then.